Welcome to Bob's Beast Thrill. My name is Bob Babbitt, and our guests basically are in the middle of Buenos Aires, Argentina. It's Andre Kajlik and Lucas Onan, and they're going from the lowest point in South America, I think, to the highest point. Andre, tell me what you guys are up to.
Yeah, so I think you basically nailed it. That's the plan. We're right now in the throes of getting ourselves and a lot of gear down to Laguna del Carbon, which is the lowest point in South America.
In elevation,
minus 344 feet. From there, we will start an 1,800-mile bike ride through southern Patagonia up north to Mendoza, where we'll begin a trek into and up Aconcagua.
So talk a little about, because you've done, as a double amputee, you did Race Across America. You've done so many different adventures. What led to this particular adventure?
So the impetus behind it, I'm going to interrupt 1 second. We need to get passport photos from each of us to Brian and Mohammed right away.
Right now.
So get Lucas a little errand real quick. It's all like very precarious right now. Things have been,
which is the way you like it.
More challenging.
Where's your passport?
We have. I'll find it. I just got to work on yours. We've found, some changes in sort of the timeline that we have, due to getting on the mountain. The government, I think, has caught wind of a wheelchair going up Aconcagua and has put a little more restrictions on how we can do it and when. So we're rushing for that. But ultimately, Bob, I know you've met Charlie Engel, the ultra runner.
Yep.
And we met on a dirt road in Brazil during a race. And I began talking to him about one of his big projects. And he had this dream to go from the lowest point to the highest point on the planet, Dead Sea to Everest. And actually, we began working on that as a project together. And, you know, through sort of changes in what we were each working on over the years, to not getting funding for planning that together, it just really didn't work out. And he went and did a trek in Africa in August. And I sort of, you know, called Lucas and Mohammed and, you know, decided that I would kind of try my own version. Like, the real deal here is to go on an adventure with some buddies, and that's what we're doing.
Well, and three challenged athletes, right? So Muhammad has to use a prosthetic on one side. He's a bronze medalist from the paratriathlon in 2016 in Rio. And tell me a little bit about Lucas.
Yeah, so Lucas is what we refer to as a winger.
Yep.
So he has, he could tell me the word, but an underdeveloped left arm I'm looking at.
Arthrogryposis.
Okay.
So he doesn't have use of one arm. It's sort of almost in, like, it's in a sling position. So he does everything one-handed, but still, he's a ski instructor. He's worked as a mountain guide. He works for the U.S. Forestry Service in the summer because sawing down trees across trails isn't hard one-handed. and so he likes a challenge, clearly.
Yeah.
And he has also done all three Leadville events this summer.
Oh, my
summer.
God. He's done the 100-mile mountain bike, the 100-mile run, and Silverman or whatever that, the Silver Rush?
It's the marathon.
Yeah, the marathon. Okay.
Marathon and a 50-mile run. Is that four events?
Four events.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's what a lead man is, apparently. And I can't wrap my head around mountain biking. Yeah, I mean, we all know One Arm Willie and his exploits in Leadville. Hard enough using a prosthetic attachment, but Lucas is one-handed the whole way. So braking, shifting, and steering while going down mountain roads and trails is crazy. So I knew he'd make a good teammate.
Yeah.
And that's why he's here.
Yeah. So for you, Andre, when you lost both legs and you were in Prague and get run over by a train, lose both legs, how long did it take you to get to the point where you wanted to be an athlete? And were you an athlete before?
Yeah, I was into everything. I wasn't very focused, but anything I could get my hands on, I think, like, you know, golf to windsurfing to baseball to snowboarding, football, you know, you name it, and I was probably doing it. But, you know, when I had the accident, I was like, I took a lot of pride in being pretty good at all of those things.
Yeah.
And after the accident, immediately I was kind of, you know, getting pressure from friends and family to take on some sports. And, you know, it struck me as if I would be doing those things in a reduced capacity, and sort of, I guess, some of the, you know, stigma and just my perceptions of wheelchair sports, it didn't interest me really at all. And my focus was just to get back to the Czech Republic, Prague, and resume life.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. I just tried my best to be, you know, quote unquote, normal for some years. And it wasn't until I got back to the States, you know, I met some guys that were heading down to the San Diego Triathlon Challenge, the CAF event. And I purely just to hang out with these guys who I had so much in common with and didn't have to explain everything about, you know, what's a prosthesis and how do you do this and that. I just wanted to spend more time with them. So I followed them down, and that's where I, yeah, really fell in love with endurance sports and, you know, looked online, saw some guys that were doing Ironman World Championships in Kona in a wheelchair and hand cycle. And I said, that's what I'm doing next. And so I set out to try to qualify and compete in Kona.
There's two different types of endurance guys, I think. There's the guys who say, hey, I did Ironman, I want to go faster. Then there's the guys like you who do the Ironman and go, what's next? And then you do Ultraman, and you thought it was an advantage for you to use your racing chair in the last day of the Ultraman and do the, you know, the double marathon in a racing chair, so you did it in your everyday chair. So, and then the next thing you're, what, do 150-mile off-road event down in South America and then race across America, which no hand cycle or no race hand cycle had ever done as a solo, right? We'd had relays before with Carlos Millet and David Bailey, but nobody had ever done it solo before. Talk a little about sort of that mindset of, okay, I'm checking this one off, and now I want to do something even harder.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is going through such a, you know, difficult time physically and emotionally, such as, you know, the trauma. It was a very scary time, and yeah. I didn't know what would be next, if I would be happy or successful in life. And getting through that and actually coming out stronger, again, both mentally and physically afterwards, just taught me a lot about, you know, that process of discovery and the expanded sense of capability you're left with. So I definitely tap into that, taking on these big challenges and sort of seek more. I do really feel like it's not just the adventure or proving what I can do physically. It's the experiences along the way, especially when you're, you know, not just following some path, you're creating your own. That's so fulfilling and I think helps me be a better person. So I want more of that. I want to be a better person. But it's certainly because of, you know, community like Challenge Athletes Foundation, hanging out with guys like Charlie Engel that, you know, are sort of make crazy, incredible feats, you know, seem normal when right. It's your circle of friends. And so that certainly opened up my mind to what's possible. And then, I mean, honestly, the first time I ever heard ultra, first time I ever heard of any race, you know, basically beyond an Ironman or a marathon, was Carlos Maleda on your podcast. And I want to say that was probably 2012.
Yeah, when he was coming
and
back.
I just, you know, it was like, well, if Carlos is digging this, like, maybe I should check out what this is about. And that just led me down a path of, you know, I wanted to do Badwater. They wouldn't let me in. So I tried to do the Brazil 135, figuring that maybe a crazy Brazilian race director was going to be willing to let me start, and that would help build my resume. And that's exactly what happened.
Well, my favorite story of that one was the trails were so steep. There were points where you were basically crawling on the ground, dragging your chair behind you, and you're in the middle of the jungle, and the monkeys are basically just sort of laughing and pointing while this crazy man is dragging his chair up a trail.
Yeah, they didn't know what to think. That's for sure. And yeah, I mean, you know, I get into a lot of these things rather naively. I mean, I do believe it's hard to really grasp what is all involved surrounding it, but it also helps start sometimes. You know, I think like any business venture, it always turns out to be more work than you were expecting. But I try to have some backup plan. And in Brazil, it was 100 feet of paracord. And so this one section where you're going up these muddy, slippery banks, I would just, hop ahead with paracord in my teeth and then turn around and reel in the wheelchair. Just did that over and over again for, you know, several kilometers to get up this mountain.
When you're doing Race Across America and it's over 3,000 miles, you know, there's that point where you're halfway there and it's either, oh my God, I'm only halfway there, or it's, hey, I'm halfway done, 1,500 miles to go. Was there a low point for you during that? Because it's not just you've got a crew that everybody's got to get along, you've got sleep deprivation, you've got to get enough nutrition in. It was a lot of logistics to make that thing work. What was the toughest part of it?
Yeah, the toughest part, you know, by far was getting through Utah. I was trying to get to Colorado and Durango, and there's the first checkpoint. I forget the time. It's 3 days, some, you know, 18 hours or so that you have to reach Durango. And it was a really tough day. It was, you know, I think it was 109 degrees or so in Utah, and it's small climbs, but really pitchy. And I was struggling, and it was looking like the time cutoff wasn't going to be met. And I just started getting really down on myself. And a big part of it was just thinking about like all the people that I invested all this time and all the support I was giving. I was going to let everybody down. And I, like, nothing had even gone wrong. I was just too slow. So that just kind of snowballs into, you know, all this, like, you know, getting down on yourself, a little pity, you know, not wanting to be there, and then not trying as hard. And, you know, honestly, it was, you know, my team that swooped in. You know, Matt Hoffman came in and took over. He was my crew chief, big CAF supporter as well. And he just, you know, started shoving food down my mouth. You know, come on, you can make this. Let's just, you know, be patient. And I just started feeling better and better. And there's a couple climbs. I think it's something like a 5 kilometer and then an 8 kilometer climb before you descend down into Durango. And I just started making some grounds on these blinky red lights ahead, which were some other Ram racers. And then I started blowing past them. I mean, I was like sprinting up these hills and it just felt incredible. I made the cutoff by an hour. It was my birthday. We had a bit of birthday cake. And I mean, from there, it was just about gravy. You know, I was going to keep pedaling, you know, no matter what, and just keep going until the finish. And I think seeing it myself, not as a blip on the map, but just like, what's my job? You know, my job in Ram was to pedal about 22 hours a day. I was going to get a little 90-minute break and then, you know, and then keep going. And as long as I focused on that, I could do that. You know, you just keep pedaling.
So this, I know you've got to get going. What, when do you start on this excursion? How many days do you think it's going to be? And can people follow you?
Yeah, so we've had to adjust the schedule a little bit. The last day they're going to allow us to enter the park has sort of changed. I mean, there's a couple things going on there, but we're waiting for a vehicle that had to have some maintenance on it, so we're kind of leaving a day later and have a day less, even a couple days less. So our mileage is going to be upped quite a bit. We might have to average about 138 miles a day on the bike, which is, you know, compare that to Ram, it's maybe nothing, but like we need to show up in shape to climb a mountain, and we're going to be on a lot of gravel roads. So a little worried about how that's going to go, but we head down there. Tonight we have 25 hour plus drive down into southern Patagonia. And yeah, we'll be making tracks as fast as we can, as soon as we can. And people can follow along on Instagram. Lowest Highest is the handle, at Lowest Highest, and online, lowesthighest.com. And we'll be trying to get out, you know, some photos via satellite as possible and doing some better updates when there's better service.
Love it. Hey, Andre, thanks again for all your amazing support of CAF over the years, and we'll be following your journey, man.
Thank you so much, Bob. Thank you for your support and for helping share this endurance world with people out there, because that's kind of what lit the dream for me. So you've been a huge supporter, and yeah, really just the man out there spreading the good word of endurance.
Thank you, buddy. Andre Kailuk has been our guest again. This is Bob's Bistro. We'll check you guys out next time.